This is Unpacking Design, a podcast to help designers of all kinds better themselves in career, business, and life. Join me, Mike LaValle, and my co-host, Tim Ong, as we unpack the problems designers face every day. Welcome to Season 2 of Unpacking Design, Life Lessons to My Younger Self. Each episode this season is a raw and unfiltered dive into what we wish we knew years ago. Since we can't turn back the clocks for ourselves, we hope that these masterclass discussions will help you on your own journey. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Unpacking Design. This is the third episode in a 12-part series called Life Lessons to My Younger Self, where Tim and I will each be sharing six lessons we've learned in our lives and careers. In the last lesson, Tim talked about speaking with clarity. And today, we're going to be talking about practice matters more than the result, a lesson that I would teach my younger self if I had the opportunity. So, Tim, I'd like to start where we all need to start. We all start somewhere. So show up today and do your best, then show up tomorrow and do it all again. That's the first mini lesson that I'd like to talk about today, because I think we all have to start somewhere. And when we talk about this idea of practice, it's about showing up. It's about starting somewhere and building upon that. So I've been writing consistently for the past 6 years, as you know, as a kind of method of creative expression. I started a blog in October 2015 and began writing about the lessons I had learned and the questions I wanted to ask of the profession of architecture. My first blog post is one of the worst and greatest things I've ever written. It's objectively horrible. But what sets it above almost everything else that I've written is that it was the first brick in the path that I paved for my creative life. And I found that starting is often one of the most difficult steps, and it was for me then. I was terrified to release that in the world. It was a very exciting and just overwhelming experience. I felt like I was, especially because I had never written a blog before. This was all new to me. This was all fresh. And it was difficult because it required me to put myself out there, to show up, to be known, to say, yes, this is Mike LaValle on the internet. And I've just had trouble before starting things, because of that. And over time, I've just realized that our work doesn't exist in a bubble. We have to be able to sort of share it with other people to get it out there. And the best way to do that is just to rip the Band-Aid and to start. One thing that we'll talk about a lot in this session is Seth Godin's The Practice. And Seth Godin puts it another way, where he says that being generous or sharing things that we create into the world is one of the greatest gifts we can give to other people and to ourselves. So I want to get your thoughts on what it's like for you to start your own projects as a way to get into the practice of doing these kinds of things and into getting into the practice of working through your work rather than focusing on the result. So let's start from the beginning. What is it like for you to start a project, and how does that matter to your process?
For me, it's different than how it used to be. When I first started, it was tougher for me to start any project because I needed to plan everything that I wanted to do, including what I thought would result from what I did. So from that perspective, when I was first getting into creating my own projects and doing things on my own time, I was actually stuck in the planning stages more so than taking action and actually pursuing the project. So for me, when I was starting off with blogging and designing and sharing my ideas with the world, I struggled with starting the projects because I would always get caught up in the planning stages of it. I would always ask the why question. Why am I doing this project? Then I would go into the how question. What are the steps to actually doing everything? And that's where everything started to compound. And I would either do it to the point where I paralyzed myself and decided not to pursue that project, or I would finally decide it's just time to start. And today, I approach it from the opposite end. I come up with the project idea. I ask myself, why is this important to me, or why does this matter? And then I think about it for a little while. And by a little while, I mean 30 minutes or so. And after that, if the idea starts to stick and I can start to see how all the other ideas around it, for my YouTube channel, for my Instagram, for myself, when all of these things are all in alignment, I know that that's the project I want to pursue. Because my goal right now is to document my process and teach other people how I design and make things. If that project that I came up with, the conception of it makes sense, no matter what it is, if it's starting another blog, if it's starting another Instagram account, if it's creating a project, if it's designing something, if I can approach it and ask myself the question, why does this matter? How does it relate to everything I'm doing? And what am I going to do to achieve it? If all of those could be answered and I can see the path forward, I write down very briefly what the plan is. And generally, it's just a sentence. And from that, I start the project and I jump into it. And then people will then ask me, well, I see all of your latest YouTube videos where it seems like you have a narrative that talks about your whole process from beginning to end. Don't you come up with that while you're developing the project so that you don't forget to say something? That's how I used to do my projects. And that's how many people think about pursuing their projects, that they always need to be thinking about it as they're doing it. But sometimes it's actually about forgetting everything you've learned about how to do something, finding your own way of doing it, and going step by step and doing it in the way that best suits your personality, your needs, and your style. So for me now, I jump into my projects. I actually go from beginning to end with it, and I record along the way. I think about the shots I want as I'm going, but I don't actually write out the narrative to tell my story of the project anymore until I'm done with the project. Because now I get to reflect, look at everything I just did, and then come up with the right way of sharing that story so that I can save people on the other end of that camera time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think, I know you've written a book before, but this might resonate with you too, and we can kind of dive into this a little bit, but it's almost like whenever I listen to other writers talk about how they've written books, and this is partially because it's on my mind because I'm in the middle of writing one myself, they always suggest writing the introduction last. So write it as like a general, you know, treatment, maybe get some of your ideas out there so you understand kind of the context of what you're going to be talking about, and then come back after you've been on that journey so that you can summarize it, put a bow on it, whatever. Because for the reader, that starting point is going to be so much clearer at the beginning for them, because it's the beginning of their journey into the topic, but it's the end of yours. And I think that there's something that's really powerful about what you just said, because showing up and being present and just letting the process flow, I think, is part of kind of what this mini lesson, I guess, is also about. So when we talk about the start of a project, whether it's, you know, me writing a blog or you starting another weekly project that works towards like a larger goal for yourself, I want to get your take also on not just how you start the project, but also what is your process for either forcing yourself to show up every day consistently, or what gets you moving to keep it going?
For me, it's just that I developed the habit of doing as best I could, pushing myself to complete a project a week. And by that, it's either designing and making a physical project, or it's designing a speculative architecture project and giving myself a week to do it. Sometimes it extends to 2 weeks, because if it's an architecture project, it just takes that much longer to develop. But I try and do a project a week, because to me, I wanted it to feel like a sport, right? Like for me, I go climb and I go out for a run pretty often. And I used to be more of an avid runner than I am now. But I had to train that muscle by forcing myself through the days that I hated doing it to go out and do it, because I knew that in the end, I was building a muscle that would help me through my life. And every day that I go out and do it, I feel like it's helping my body and it's helping me it's actually in a very interesting way helping my mind, just getting out and breathing and going through the exercise itself. And from that analogy, I applied it to the same idea with architecture and design, because I'm not only designing architecture these days, I'm actually designing products too. And when I do both of those things, I see each one as being a sport. That architecture is my sport and designing physical products is my sport. I need to pursue both of those things and practice it as regularly as possible so that I can get better at that skill and at all the things that come with it. If you don't do something enough, I don't think you can give yourself permission to ask yourself, why is it that I'm not making it anywhere? Because if you never tried, then there's no reason for you to ask yourself that question. And that's the way that I talk to myself, that if I want to be great at architecture or if I want to be great at designing physical products, I have to define what great means to me. And I have to actually put in the time and not just put in the hours. Like I can't just tell myself that this is what a lot of people do. And this is what I'm starting to realize, that people will think practice equates to the time you spend doing the thing that you want to get better at. And for me, it's not just the amount of time that you're putting into something, because mentally you can say to yourself, I'm going to devote 4 hours this Saturday to designing architecture. But if during those 4 hours, you just sat down and watched Netflix, but you were thinking about architecture, that doesn't really mean that you were practicing it, right? So when you equate hours to mastery and expertise, you can't just tell yourself that I'm going to devote time in my written schedule and count that time towards the practice of doing the thing. It's as if I were to say, I'm going to devote time to go out and run and become better at running a 5K in less than 30 minutes or whatever it is. And then when I go out for that run, I just walk with my phone in my hand. They don't equate to the same thing, because you're not actually practicing the thing that you said you were going to do. So I just wanted to put that out there, because for me, when I pursue a project, it really means that I'm practicing all of the things that come with it. If it's related to architecture, I'm not just thinking about it. I'm actually sketching it. I'm writing down ideas. I'm developing the 3D model. I'm developing the rendering. And through that process, I'm using all the tools of the trade to craft the final project in the way that I see in my mind and sharing it with the world in the way that I can speak. So when you start combining all these things, when I pursue a project, that's what it looks like to me. I come up with that sentence, come up with that phrase, I come up with whatever it is that I need to start to clearly identify what I'm about to pursue. And as I pursue it, it helps me clearly articulate what the project actually is about by the time I'm done. And then I clearly articulate it at the end of the project to people. So now they can follow the story.
Wow. So I guess on the one hand, I think I understand your own process better. I don't think you've ever said that in that way to me. And we talk a lot, so that was great. I learned a lot about you just now. But I think the thing that really stuck out to me about that was this idea of not just, so like I carve out time for myself to show up, right? And sometimes I will give myself a little bit of a pass on, okay, well, as long as I'm here and I'm kind of doing the thing, then I can check that off for the day. But I think the thing that's great about what you just said is it's not about passively showing up for something. It's about actively engaging with that practice and not pursuing necessarily a goal. Like when you go rock climb, it's not about winning at rock climbing. You're not winning at rock climbing. And this kind of comes back to the idea of the infinite game by Simon Sinek, where he talks a lot about the idea of you can't win at business. You can't win at even competition. You might be able to win a match or you might be able to win like an instance of something, right? But when it comes to developing skills or working towards something, you know, we are all in this infinite game where there will be more chances to, or at bats, as Gary Vee might say, where you are continually able to put yourself out there, or like the only time that the infinite game stops is when we die. Like when you literally have no possibility of doing that thing again. But the way you described it is a lot like that, where you're actively engaged with something. And I think that's just, it's very powerful because it's not just, it brings clarity to this little mini lesson, right? Like it, I want to be clear throughout this entire sort of discussion that we're having that it's not just about practicing just to practice. Like anybody can practice something, but if you're not engaged in the practice, then that practice won't mean as much when you're done, no matter how much time you put in. And I think that was really well put. So thanks, Tim. I do want to move on to the next mini lesson here. And this is more about a topic that I think we've probably embraced a lot more as we've gotten older. But the next mini lesson I would tell my younger self is to fail, fail, and fail some more. Learn from that failure and apply the lessons that you learn and move forward to the next thing. So it's not about practice, or it's about practice. It's not about perfection, right? I've written hundreds of thousands of words developing my personal voice through writing. And that's just a staggering amount of words now that I'm reading that out loud. Trying to connect with those who are just willing to listen, right? And when I sit down and I stare at that blank page, all I can think about is how best I could share something meaningful with the world. Like, how do I do that? And it wasn't always that way. I needed to find that part of me, reveal it to myself through the practice of writing. And this goes a little bit into the idea that if you don't practice something, you're not going to find essentially where your faults are. I'll give you another example that we're working through in real time here over the last few weeks. You and I have been on the app Clubhouse. And while you have been, it's been interesting to see kind of our trajectory on Clubhouse, not in terms of followers or accounts or anything like that, but I feel like you are engaging in that world in the same way you talked about this practice of sport, finding your sport. And for you personally, I've seen you grow a lot in terms of just how you found your own voice and the way that you are communicating with people and other and me, and you're growing a lot in terms of finding more of how you communicate with the world, right? But that happens with these reps that you put in and actively engaging. Whereas I've engaged a little bit more and I found that my speech pattern has improved here and there, but maybe not to that same level. And we've seen through these different rooms and these different discussions that we've had on this Clubhouse app that there are always things that we could do better, but I wouldn't know what those things were until I tried to speak in front of other people in that format, in that setting. And the same thing with the writing. I wouldn't have known what worked, what didn't. If we go back to that original blog post that I would almost in some ways rather not be on the internet, it's hard to look at some of those failures, but at the same time, I am learning so much about what it is to communicate with other people on Clubhouse and through my writing that I find that my growth has increased by just showing up and practicing that and learning from those failures. I will then go into the next session, the next room, the next blog post and take those lessons with me. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect process, but I wanted to read an excerpt here from Seth Godin's The Practice, just because I think it's very applicable. And it's actually a question that I wanted to ask you, Tim. If you knew you were sure to fail, then what would you do? There's no need to know the details of the practice before we begin. We can't know the recipe because there isn't a recipe. Recipes are always outcome dependent. And I wanted to ask you that question. If you knew you were sure to fail, what would you do? Would you still pursue a project, or would you, and I guess it depends on how you gauge failure, but if you knew outright, that you were going to fail a project, would you pursue it still?
For me, I've been thinking about a similar question to that, and I'm already working on the things that I would be doing if I knew I could not fail. What I'm trying to get to in my life, and this is what I think most people resonate with, is this idea of not having to work because you need the money to live, but working on the things that I want to be doing and the things that I enjoy doing because I want to give back. And for me, it's something that has now it's driving everything that I'm pursuing, because I already asked myself the question of what would I do if I knew I couldn't fail. The question was answered through the YouTube channel that I started, because that embodied all the fears that I had about doing something, recording myself physically with a camera, recording myself through my voice, sharing a story, which is my inner knowledge and my inner being, and starting to take a position on camera and actually sharing my own thoughts about design with the world. All of those things compounded and became something that I would have never expected it to become. And it was that I needed to take the first step to get to this point, because you and I talked about the potential of me starting a YouTube channel for over 4 years. I just couldn't get over the fear of starting one. And for me, I think about that question a lot, because I always ask myself that question. That's why when I walk into negotiations, if it's not a number that I agree with, I ask why. I don't just accept something at face value anymore. I ask why, because I want to get a better understanding of things. The other part of it is, if I knew I couldn't fail, the biggest thing I would want in my life is to be doing the things that I enjoy doing. If it's waking up and talking to people about something that I believe in, I want to be able to do that with no strings attached, with no boundaries, with nothing that holds me back from sharing something. And that in and of itself is what drives the idea that I have of working towards a greater cause and getting to a point where I could get paid to do the things that I love to do. So I've been working on that, and I'm curious if you've been thinking about it in a similar way or not. So what's your take on the question?
I think that younger Mike, and this is honestly one of the reasons why I would tell this to my younger self, would say, hell no. I would probably say, I want to succeed in everything that I do, and failure isn't the objective. Now, granted, I'm not trying to fail in projects that I pursue right now either, but I accept it more almost like a... I don't want to say a rite of passage, but like a necessary evil in some ways. And I don't even, evil is not even the right word. Like, it's a necessary part of the process, right? To fail is in some ways a blessing, because it teaches you how to be better or how to become better. It lays down the path of how to grow, right? It teaches you what the next step is. It allows you to approach a project in a different way in the future. So as an example, I remember, this is a very architectural related project, not related to writing that I was talking about, but you know that I had pursued a design build competition to design a little free library in Buffalo, New York. And for me, I ended up winning the competition. And one of the results of that was to build this little library. And for anybody who doesn't know what a little free library is, it's essentially a mailbox size library where it's open to the public. You set it next to the side of the road, and there's usually a door on it where you can open the door. Anybody walking by can drop off a book, take a book, and it's supposed to be this sort of free spirit thing, right? And I created this design for it that ended up being sort of a nightmare to put together, because when I was designing it in SketchUp, and just hand sketches and things like that, and conceptualizing it, it seemed really simple. Like, it's just going to be you know, 200 of these linear pieces, and I just stitch them all together, and it's going to be fine. It's going to be really cool when it's done, and then it's going to be something that everybody's going to love. The thing I didn't realize was that there's a lot more that went into that to make the simple, or to make the complex simple. So it was actually much more complex and complicated than I wanted it to be. And there were several times where I essentially had to, even the first iteration of that project fully built was kind of a cluster. And I mean that in a very sincere way. It was not successful. The doors were like kind of not properly mounted on the hinges that I wanted. Everything was kind of, it looked sort of sloppy. And I had tried my best to really make it what it was supposed to be, to make this really simple but engaging library for the community. And I felt like I failed. I felt like I had been a failure. I touted in my competition entry that I was an architect. I knew what I was doing. I should be able to do this. And I ended up coming back later, Tim, and essentially retrofitting and kind of redesigning the way that these pieces all came together. I took it apart. I rebuilt portions of it. I had to figure out what wasn't working and what was working. And, you know, it costs more money. It costs more time. It was a little bit embarrassing that I had to come back and do this in the first place. But that lesson for me was about showing up and taking sort of responsibility for the failure, and then knowing that if I ever did something like that again, what I should do in that process. Now, granted, I don't know if I'm ever going to make it a little free library ever again, but that lesson of failing, and failing pretty hard, like it was embarrassing what the first version of this thing actually looked like when it was built. It was just eye-opening to me. And I don't know if you've ever had a sort of a public failure like that, but it's not pleasant.
No, I haven't had one like that. What I do know is, in terms of a similar story, I was once approached by a camera crew in this exhibit that I was a part of for a competition idea that I put out there for sustainability. During that whole like camera thing, it was just being recorded. It wasn't being projected. It wasn't live. It wasn't anything like that. It was just a guy who was documenting this to hopefully put together a commercial. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. So he comes up to me and I froze, and he like put the camera up on me and told me to explain my project. And I remember rambling on, and I don't even know what I said. That's how bad it was. I just blacked out and just kind of said anything. And by the end of it, I was like, oh my God, I hope that's not going to be used. But now you talk to me today and you're like, wow, he's so articulate. He knows what he's saying. He takes his time. And it's because I've had those failures in that sense. Yeah, that could have been a dramatic public failure had it been live. But in all honesty, that person had the respect to not put it up, because I was just like, hey, look, I really don't know what I just said, and so on and so forth. But I learned from that. And the last story I wanted to share related to this idea of failure, that's related to what you're saying, is about failure being what you define it to be. Because oftentimes we're afraid of failing, but we never identified what failure means. In your case, it was building a free library where the books could actually be stored. If you fail at that simple objective, then it's a failure. But the other side of it is, you could have accepted that failure and just moved on and said, well, there goes all the books. The books are gone. You know, thanks everyone for putting your books in there, but they're gone. But you came back to it. And it's this idea of taking someone who's younger, right? Imagine you're at home with your son, your daughter, your sister, your brother, whoever it is, and you say, hey, can you go out to the supermarket and pick up a banana? I just need a bundle of bananas so that I can make a banana pie. They're like, okay, sure. They go out and they grab any bunch of bananas that they see. They bring it back. You look at it and you can clearly see that it's beyond yellow. It's like the browner color, and it's just, it doesn't look right. At that point, if it was your first time baking banana bread or baking a pie and you wanted sweet bananas, you probably would look at that person and say, wow, that was a total failure. I asked you to buy bananas. Why wouldn't you just buy the freshest ones? Why would you buy these ones? And then the person not knowing anything would feel like a failure. And they probably wouldn't even question it because it wasn't in their alignment or in their vision for their future to know how to buy bananas, right? Like, it's not their goal to learn how to buy bananas. And for you as the baker, you're like, hey, you know what? This person bought the wrong bananas. What do I do? Do I go out, buy another one? Do I just scrap this project I was about to do? Do I just move on? Generally, most people, more often than not, will either buy the next bunch of bananas, the right ones to them that were right, or they would actually just not do it. But there's actually a third option to it. It was to try it with the bananas that were purchased and see how it would come out and actually test it and experiment it. Most people don't go through that step. And the reason why I mentioned that is because when you're baking and you want sweet bananas, you actually want the ones that are starting to turn a little brown, because they carry the most sweetness in the banana. No one would know that unless they experimented enough with cooking to know that if you wanted sweet bananas, you actually wait for it to get a little bit brown, because that's where the sweetness comes out. If you buy bananas that are a little bit green at the top and yellow throughout, the bananas are not sweet. They're actually sort of flavorless, and you're supposed to leave it so that they start to age a little. So it brings back this idea that a lot of people in our society want to be viewed as a design thought leader. They want to be viewed as an expert in something. To be viewed as that, to them, it means they need to go out and talk about the thing that they want to be seen as a leader in. But if you're talking about something without actually knowing the deep thoughts behind it and the deeper meanings behind something and the whole process of it, then you miss the point of what it means to have an expertise. Because for that reason, you're just an amateur. And I don't mean it in the sense that people think of amateur as a word that's demeaning. I mean it in the sense that you love something, so you want to share it, but that doesn't make you an expert. And it doesn't mean that you should go out and tell people you are one. So when it comes to this whole idea about failing, there are ways that you can fail because you set out to do something. But within that failure, if you don't take the time to dive in and to figure out if it was actually wrong or right, or what else you could learn from it, then I think that's a true failure. But if you actually took the time to investigate what went wrong, like people who go out to a crime scene and try and stitch the pieces together, you never fully understand all the things you could have learned from that failure, because it's when you fail where you learn the most, because you should take the time to investigate what went wrong.
Yeah, that's a great food analogy and a great way of thinking about it. I think what you're basically saying is that Little Free Library was a crime scene. I think that's basically what you just said.
Yeah, basically. You didn't investigate it enough. But no, in all honesty, you did. You investigated and you fixed it.
So. Yeah, I think the thing that I also kind of wanted to build on there a little bit before we move on to the next mini lesson was, it, to me, I even described it as I was just as talking to you here today, Tim, that the entire situation was this very public failure. But the reality was it wasn't. Like, it was something that I perceived in the moment as a very public failure. But I don't think that that's really how anybody other than myself perceived it. And I think that's another important part of this discussion on failure. It's about our personal fears of what we're trying to work on, what we're trying to get past. And by showing up, by practicing, by working towards things, by learning from these failures, whether they're big or small or otherwise, and like you said, being sort of this like forensic analyst and trying to understand like, okay, well, what is happening in this situation? What could I do better? What went well? You know, I mean, it's not always a true failure. There's almost always something that went well as part of that process. And where can I grow from those moments that test us? You know, like where can I find that growth? I think when you put on that sort of Sherlock Holmes cap and go into a project looking for, okay, how can I not just be successful in this project, possibly learn from failures, but where can I find the growth for me? I almost never pursue a project now without thinking about how it might help me grow. And I think through that failure is one of the best ways. It's not pleasant all the time to fail. It's actually... frustrating at times, but it's also the thing that kind of moves the needle forward. And for me, I pursued that project specifically because I was uncomfortable with my physical fabrication skills. And the entire point of that project for me was to design something cool that somebody would interact with at like a human scale, but something that I could physically build with my hands. I spent 2 or 3 months like fabricating this from 18 2x4s that I cut down to like 200 pieces and stitched together with steel dowels and poured a concrete foundation. And for me, it was like one of the best experiences that I've had building something, because a lot of my experience up till then was designing things that other people built. So for me to fail, quote unquote, fail in the first iteration, and then go back to the drawing board after I recognize, okay, well, this crime scene is teaching me this and that about this process. I then took that failure. And I think now the Little Free Library isn't perfect, but it's way better than it was. And I learned from that. And I'll take those lessons with me. So on to the next mini lesson. I think the other thing that I would talk or tell my younger self is to find meaning in the grind, so to speak, not in the achievement. Milestones and goals will help you move forward, but will feel hollow if they're the only thing you strive for. And we've talked a lot about this before, Tim, where searching for accolades, searching for achievements, and not, it's kind of like the journey is better than the destination. So strive for that journey, be present in what you're doing. When you first start out, looking for people who want to experience your work can be daunting. And for some, it comes easier. For others, yours truly included, it comes with challenges. I remember comparing myself to almost everyone who influenced me. They were creatives, bloggers, makers, designers, and frankly, stars who had achieved some level of notoriety through their work. As I watched their videos, read their articles, I kept comparing their thousands and sometimes millions of views to my 5 or 10 people reading my articles. Who was I to be writing on the internet, right? And I felt like an imposter. And I felt like these people had done things, they had reached milestones that I hadn't reached before, they had achieved, you see these people getting all these different kinds of awards and prizes and accolades and pats on the back. And ultimately, I did gain traction as I kept moving, but I also found burnout in the process by trying to compare myself to other people. And when I think of that process, I try not to look for followers anymore as much as one person at a time that I can help, because I think that you would probably agree with this, Tim, and I kind of wanted to get your take on this. When you're looking to help an individual and not try to just search for what is the next, gold medal I can achieve in this process of being a creative, I think that you find that meaning in that grind, in that practice, by pursuing it for a better reason than just what is the next goalpost.
Yeah, that's something that I also went through in terms of the imposter syndrome and just all of the doubts that come with it. I continually doubted myself when I wanted to practice something where I could see other people doing it. And by that, I'm referring to the quantifiable numbers that you see other YouTubers, you see other architects, you see other people who have been published. And all you can think to yourself is, none of my architecture projects have been published. None of my design projects are published. When I post any of my projects online, I get maybe 5 to 10 likes compared to people out there who have thousands of likes within 15 minutes of posting, right? And you focus on those numbers so much that what actually stops you from working towards something and getting into the grind of creating it is that you try and apply their number to you and you compare your numbers. But because of that, you don't actually find it within yourself that self-motivation that you need to pursue the grind of creating the things you want to create. So when I think about this whole idea of being an imposter and all of the doubts that come with it, it reminds me of something that our mutual friend said, Matthew Encina, who had this really great way of putting it. He said, you see all of the people who are following him on YouTube. You see all of the millions of views he's getting. And the first thing you probably are thinking to yourself is, wow, he did that in such a nice way. And so many people love his videos. He's so great at what he's doing. And you start to put him on this pedestal and you start to assume that he either got really lucky or he's just one of those people who knows what he's doing. But he said this one thing that really put it in the right, in the way that framed my mind in a totally different way. He said, people don't actually see him and know that the videos he put out that has hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views, is a culmination of over 15 years of consistent work on video development alone. He was developing videos when the Mac first came out. I mean, think back. The Mac first came out. That's before YouTube was even around, right? And so if you compare yourself to people who have 50 years of experience, 30 years of experience, 15 years of experience, 10 years, even 5 years, they were grinding in the background all that time. Everyone always sees that ripped person in the gym, that shredded person who's like there and they walk around and you're like, oh my God, that person, they're so amazing. But if you ask them, they probably have someone that they see that way too. So this whole idea is a nonstop vicious cycle of comparison. And ultimately, if you don't actually try to do something and put in the hours and put in the reps, you don't actually have the ability to say, I can't believe I'm not there yet, because you didn't even try. It's like saying you want to walk to the store and you tell yourself that for a few days, you have no groceries in your fridge. And you're like, I gotta go to the supermarket because I have to eat. But all this time, you compare yourself with all the people out there, the chefs who are cooking good food at home during the pandemic and all this stuff. And let's say that that crippled you and you didn't want to go out because you didn't want to make your own food. Well, then you would sit at home and after a few days, you'd be malnourished. After a few more days, you wouldn't be around, right? So there comes a point in time in which even comparisons doesn't matter because you need to do something. And I think everyone eventually finds that point where they say, I don't care about what so-and-so is doing. I don't care about the numbers. I don't care about this. I don't care about that. What I care about is that I'm doing something that I love. And when you get to that point that you enjoy the thing you're doing, the grind is something you look forward to, not something that you despise because you're comparing what the output was with the quantifiable numbers of someone else.
Yeah, I love that story. And I remember Matt talking a lot about his experience recently. And it connects with me because I think in our culture today, Tim, and you'll probably agree with this, is that I don't know at what point it shifted, right? But there's this idea now that we need gratification sooner than ever. If we start something, we need to see the results now. Like we need to see the fruits of our labor expressed right now. We need to be at like 1 million followers. And I think platforms like TikTok aren't helping, where I've seen literally people go from, you know, 10,000 followers to 10 million in the course of a year, partially because of the pandemic and people just not knowing what else to do with themselves other than to watch TikTok videos. But I think that there's something about that mentality where we need this absolute sort of gratification immediately that makes being a creative difficult in a world where that is the norm now. And part of this is about patience and finding this meaning in the grind by just pursuing it because you loved, like you said, like pursuing it for the right reasons, for the love of the game in such a way. And another little mini story I wanted to kind of just tack on here before we move on to the next mini lesson is, you know that I'm a gamer, and for people who can relate to this, I play a video game called Destiny, and that is a games as a service, which means that every week it resets and you pursue these missions, you pursue these achievements, you pursue these new things to keep you in the game, right? And a lot of times you'll be pursuing this one very difficult to reach accolade milestone. Sometimes it's getting new gear. Sometimes it's making your character better in some way. And it takes a long time. And there is this real sense of what gamers would call a grind to going from one thing to the next, building yourself up and trying to achieve that one thing. And the thing that I found over the course of a couple of years of playing that game is the most enjoyment I get out of even playing a game like that is when I'm playing with one of my friends and we're just chatting and we're pursuing the same kind of goal together. But once I actually get that new piece of armor, that new weapon, that new thing that's going to make my character way better in some way, or I perceive it that way, it's even as simple as that, where I don't almost care like what that new piece of gear is or whatever, because I remember those memories of sitting down and having conversations with my friend as we played this game together. And I think that that is more meaningful to me. And I will remember those moments more than when I got that thing or I achieved that thing. And I think it relates to a lot of different facets of our lives. My analogy wasn't as good as your banana analogy, Tim, so I apologize, but that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, you know, the last point I wanted to just make on this whole idea of the grind is a conversation I had recently. It was with a group of people, and I was getting vulnerable and sharing this idea of my future. And as I was talking about it, I said this one line that stuck with someone. I said, the one thing I look forward to in the future is the struggle that I see other entrepreneurs going through. Because when I see the struggle, I see beauty in it. I see someone who's trying hard to make something work. I see so many opportunities to test. I see so much happening. And that person came back with a rebuttal. And the rebuttal was, Tim, I disagree with the notion that there's beauty in the struggle. Because if you're starting a business, you should not be struggling. And it was in that moment that I realized that for me and for other people, that no one in that situation was right or wrong. The difference was the use and choice of words. That for me, it was actually me implying that I actually enjoy the hustle, the grind, and the process of doing something. The person who was talking to me, the way that I interpreted what they were saying was that it's not about the grind. It's not about any of that. Every business should just be successful. Otherwise, your business sucks. That's how I interpret it. I'm sure that the person didn't mean it that way, but that's how I interpreted that statement. I don't know who else would have interpreted it in that same way, but I found such an emotional attachment to what I was trying to get across, because to me, I love the process. And for anyone who goes up to a designer and says something along those lines, that no one with a business should be struggling, I think it's based on someone who has too optimistic of a view on the world. Because when you get to that point, it's as if you're saying that there should not be people who are starving in the world, because it was a choice that they're starving. And I disagree with that notion. And so for me, when we talk about the grind, I think everyone has something that they're grinding and they're trying to get to the very bottom of it. When you think about grinding spices, you're trying to get it to a level that you can use it in your food and get flavor. You're using that whole thing. So you have to learn that the process of doing something and the process of actually turning something into something else that'll make everything else better takes time, it takes effort, it takes energy, and it takes experience. You need the grind to get the experience that you need to have to do the thing that you want to be doing. And for me, that's why I love the process. And that's why I had that really emotional reaction to someone saying that to me, because it makes it seem as if the grind and the whole part of that struggle of trying to find something for yourself was just put to nothing. And I didn't like that statement. And that's why I wanted to share it here, because I know that there are people who agree on either end. And if you're on the end that doesn't like the grind, then that's, it might not be for you, but there's something else that you want to be doing. And within that thing that you want to be doing, you're going to find that you don't have all the knowledge in the world. Otherwise, you would be a superhuman.
Yeah, I really love that. I think that this idea that we are just, personally, I don't think I don't necessarily like the grind in the moment. I think there are certain times where the process can feel daunting, and I have to sort of reset myself a little bit and remind myself of why I'm doing certain things. I think that helps a lot. And for some people, part of it becomes a little bit of a game that we play with ourselves, right? And it's about, the thing that stuck out to me is when you said to find the use and choice of the words that you're kind of telling yourself. I think for me, I pursue things and accept the grind as I don't even necessarily call it the grind anymore. I just think of it as that practice, that process. And it's not thinking of it as in any sort of optimistic way. It's a part of how I build up myself and how I learn from the process, how I learn from whatever the project is that I'm working on or what I'm pursuing. And I just know inherently that I'm going to be better on the other end of it somehow. It doesn't necessarily mean that I win a medal or win an award or do something great, but that I will be transformed in some way to help myself do better in the process. And I think when it comes down to what you're saying, Tim, there are those people who would rather just not, like you said, it's like saying that if you don't have to struggle, it's like saying that there are people who aren't hungry in the world or something like that. Like, I love when you said that, because it's just because you deny it doesn't mean that it's, I don't know, for me, that it's not a, it doesn't exist, I guess. So I did want to move on to the next mini lesson here. And I think that this is something I've talked a lot about, and it's related to this idea of the practice not, practice mattering more than the result, in that life in general is, I believe, is a marathon and not a sprint. Consistency long-term will help you more than sprinting. And showing up every day or every week on a regular basis and finding your pace is very important to your overall success. So when you hear the word marathon, what comes to mind? I think most people think of a 26 plus mile grind and years of training to get there. And no matter how you cut it, marathons are difficult. It's not easy to run a marathon. I certainly don't know if or when I will ever run one. Tim, you might be able to relate and might be more apt to wanting to run a marathon at some point. The race, though, is actually fairly straightforward. You just run for 26 miles and you're done. You're done at the end of the race. And I think that overall, running a marathon feels difficult because of that duration of that length that we need to succeed, right? But it's something that I think we can all set our own pace at. I remember running a less daunting race recently before the pandemic called the Corporate Challenge, which was a 5K race in Buffalo, New York, and it's held throughout the country. But I am not a natural runner, and I have been using things like this 5K to help better myself and to help sort of compete with myself over time. And over the last or the past three races, I had brought my time down to, you know, 3 minutes here, 4 minutes there, 5 minutes there. And I found that the beauty in running a race like that is that you get to decide what your pace is. You get to decide how you control that pace. You're not sprinting for the entire duration. I mean, honestly, Tim, you're more of a runner than I am, so maybe you're running at like twice the speed that I am the entire duration. But I found that the journey, that kind of consistency long-term, is about us setting our own pace and just being a sort of showing up to put in those reps, as we've talked about previously in the conversation, and setting the pace that works for us so that we don't burn out along the way. We all kind of are able to work towards that finish line, finish that race, whether that for us is a creative project or not. And I think of it more or less along the lines of, imagine if you sprinted everywhere. If every task was just another frantic run to the next goal, you wouldn't be able to adjust properly over the long term. You would just keep moving and moving, and you wouldn't be able to react properly. You would just keep going. And running the marathon at a consistent and constant pace that works for yourself isn't a sexy process, but it's effective. It builds resilience and it creates a larger vision of how you spend your time. And you're able to react properly, in my mind, to what comes next, what you want to work on next, how you work towards your larger goal, and how you pick away at it. And when you combine a vision of pacing yourself with sort of this larger why for yourself, I think you become kind of unstoppable. And it reminds me of this quote by Natalie Ellis: I'm on a lifelong journey to becoming my best self. And I kind of wanted to get your sense of Tim here on what is consistency to you? And do you feel like you are in a series of sprints all the time, or are you really working on that kind of marathon-like journey for yourself?
For me, it's definitely working on the marathon journey. And the interesting part about using the analogy of running that I don't think was picked up on here when you're speaking is actually the fact that it's a game of mental fortitude. So if someone is trying to run a marathon or has run one or has a goal of running one and is training for it, there's the two parts to it. The first is the consistency of practice, because you need to have done it over and over and over to the point where you physically are in shape to do it. Once you're in shape to run a marathon, the second thing is the pacing, like you said, that you now have to pace yourself, find that comfortable pace in which you can go and run nonstop, even beyond a marathon. Everyone who runs has that pace. If you just slow down a little bit, you'll find a pace that to you feels like you're kind of walking, that you're not making it too far as fast as you know you could, but you stay in that zone because to you, you can breathe in and out through your nose, you can keep it going, and you can run the distance you set out to run. After you find that pace, it's not a matter of whether or not you could run the full marathon. It actually becomes a game of mental fortitude. And that is the hardest thing for anyone to learn. I tried to run a marathon before, and I have run a half marathon. When I ran a half marathon, I was able to just wake up, get outside, set the goal and say, okay, I'm going to try and run a half marathon today. And I went out and I did it. When I did it, it was about an hour and 45 minutes. I was done with it. I was like, oh, that's a pretty good time, you know? And then the day that I went out to run or try to run a full marathon just on my own will, I reached about 15 to 16 around there. And when I was in that range, I found that I ran out of things to think about because I used to use those runs as a way of clearing up ideas in my head. By that time, when I had nothing else to think about, it was all about the run. And now you have maybe another hour or two at my pace to finish that marathon. And I knew that for me to finish it, I needed to have that mental fortitude because I gave up. I gave up because I had nothing else to think through in my head. I wasn't thinking about the run. I wasn't thinking about anything else. I was just thinking about the pain in my feet, or I was just thinking about how much further I had to go, how much time I was going to waste, how much time I was going to invest. Eventually, it all came crashing down and I said, well, I'm just going to go home. And I went home. And to me, that's what consistency is all about. It's not about building yourself up and doing the same thing over and over and over again. It's about doing it enough and paying so much attention to what you've done that you know that there's more ahead of you and you can keep focusing and getting deeper and deeper into a subject that you're pursuing. Because when you stop learning and you stop going deeper and you stop having those exciting moments, things get boring, right? You work on the same thing and consistency is not going to keep you going. And that's what mental fortitude is. You have to be able to continually fortify your mind by finding things to help you build what you know and build what you believe. Because if you don't have that, you're not going to have the motivation to continue doing anything consistently and sharing anything with anyone, because you'll eventually reach a wall in which you doubt yourself and you stop. So if you want consistency, it's about that continual practice of getting better. The moment you stop trying to get better is the moment that you get stagnant and you burn out.
Yeah, that's a great set of points there, Tim. I think that the thing I think about when I'm running, which I guess for a little bit more context, I was sort of that overweight fat kid in middle school and elementary school. And part of that, I think, was because of the transitions that were happening in my life. I had just moved to Hamburg, New York, or I guess for most people, that's a suburb of Buffalo, New York. And this was when I was like 11, right? And my dad had just switched jobs. We moved far away from Pennsylvania, 2 hours away. I left all my friends behind. And I was in a place in my life where I didn't really know anybody. It was all new to me. And I found that through the sport of soccer, I was able to find this filter for myself, this way to bring something consistent into my life. So I joined the soccer team for Hamburg and I played soccer for 4 years and had this a little bit of a kind of a highlight of athletics in my life. And the reason I bring that up is because I knew from sort of burning out a couple of years ago that for me, finding that practice in bettering myself through running, through consistently growing back up my athletic abilities, not to perform at any specific level other than to just better myself, that was possible for me. And I think I wouldn't have known that necessarily if I hadn't challenged myself before and learned from that and then used that again after later in my life to sort of do the same thing. I think part of the consistency is testing yourself, but I think part of it is showing up, trying different things, testing yourself in different ways. Because, you know, for you, Tim, I know just based on the amount that you run, you are testing yourself in different ways than I am when I run right now. And partially that becomes a factor of just you've been more consistent, I think, with those kinds of things over time. And you've achieved a certain kind of level where the things that you're trying to pursue are different goals, little goals, than the things that I'm trying to pursue. And that's okay. I think part of that is, it kind of goes back to when we were talking about comparison and getting in that trap. We joke about it a lot where I feel like you could go for a 5-mile run right now and I might die if I went for a 5-mile run right now. But there's something about pursuing an activity, pursuing something over time, changing where maybe your goalpost is, what you're trying to pursue in that moment. But being consistent about showing up, I think, helps a lot. The other thing that I want to talk a little bit about before we move on to the last mini lesson is this idea of how consistency can sort of supercharge our abilities and our skills and our paths. And one day we just kind of wake up and we just realize that we've achieved something else. A couple of years ago, went to the retirement sort of gala of my mentor and professor at Syracuse University, Art McDonald. He was my third year professor in school, a studio professor. He was a professor that I had for a couple other studios and honestly, one of my better friends in terms of professors there. And he retired a few years ago. And one of the things that they did was they made a sort of a exhibition of all his work. And he was able to sort of showcase two projects that he had done over the course of his career. And the one thing that struck me as we were sort of standing there together, he said to me, and it's something that I've carried with me since, is that he just commented on, you know, it's funny that when you work in something for a long period of time, you have these moments of just exponential growth. And then you have these plateaus where you feel like you're not really moving. And then you have these other moments where you recognize, oh, wait, I did go through this growth again. So for anybody who's looking at this or trying to imagine this on a chart, think of it less like a linear graph or a linear diagonal line going upwards or even a parabolic curve. But think of it as some combination of a curve that goes up, a flat line or a nearly flat line, and then another curve, and then the same thing repeats itself. And I thought that that was something that I kind of wanted to get your take on here, Tim, because for me, I found that by being consistent as a designer, as a creative, I've noticed that there are certain things that consistency allows me. I'm constantly growing, but there are moments when I recognize that I've actually, because of that consistency, had these breakthrough moments where I am just so much better at something than I thought I was. And it's not until I'm explaining it to somebody else or mentoring somebody else that I realize that consistent growth that was happening for me really was probably a little bit more exponential than I thought it was. And then there will be other moments where I'm kind of coasting, maybe I'm not learning as much, but then I'll have that breakthrough moment again. And I wondered what it was like for you, if you've had similar experiences or if it's something completely different.
I think it's something that I go through all the time. Like right now with the YouTube channel, I'm definitely at a point where I did reach that plateau because the video style and all the systems that I developed to edit and to design every project and make it became so straightforward to me that I could do it in my sleep. And I say that not in a way of bragging, but in a way of saying that it took time of consistent practice to get to a point where I could do that at the level of the video that I was creating. So when that moment came, I got a little bit bored, honestly, because I was like, well, I know I could do this. I know it's going to take this much time. It all just became a math equation, and I'm not a mathematician by any means. So I then decided, if I know that the level of my video is X, and I know that the projects that I'm designing and everything else is at a higher level, because as a designer, I've already been practicing this for over a decade. Well, the ways that I can challenge myself and continue to grow was not to try and up my game with my designs, because that in and of itself is so organic that there is no way of upping my level of design. It's an exploration. Then the only thing that was going to push me to work harder and to continue to grow was to decide that it was time to up the level of the output of the video. So when I pushed that level up and I said, I want my videos to have more meaning. I want to make sure that the videos are more captivating. I want to make sure that these videos are going to be more interesting so that people who are not even designers or in the field will feel so compelled to share the video or to watch it from end to end. That was the moment where I realized that for me, it was about getting out of that comfort and pushing myself to go beyond it. And when I find that comfortable level again, that's the moment to push again. And I found that moment again because I realized I was using the same tools to create products. Then when I identified that it was the tools, I realized that my way of increasing the things that I was making to a new level so that I can continue to learn, I decided to buy a new tool. And now I've got a 3D printer. And when the 3D printer gets to a point where I feel like I'm comfortable with the things I'm making, then I'm going to get another tool, or I'm going to up the level of my video and get a better camera. And so now you start to find these ways of tweaking little things, right? And that's like when you hear someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger who goes out there and he's like, you know what? I want to work this exact muscle on my back in this area of my back. And then he knows what machine to use and how to use it just to target that zone. It's any bodybuilder in a gym, right? Like they know which machines and how to use it to target one specific zone of their body. If you ask me how to do it, I could not tell you. But when you practice your craft enough, you can identify those little things that are like so specific that only you and people at your level can identify. That's your moment to get better. And those are the things that make you very unique as a person.
Yeah, that's great. I think finding it's like playing a game with yourself, right? You are trying to find that growth spurt again, or that thing that will keep you engaged as well. There's the one thing I will say about the practice that we haven't really touched on too much, but you said it, is that it got boring for you. You know, there are times when it's not the most glamorous thing in the world. And often we lose that. You've talked a lot about it with the dip in Seth Godin as well, where there's this moment where we don't want to initially push through. We have this decision on whether or not we can abandon a project or move forward. And I think for you, finding that consistency and pushing through that growth by either getting a new tool or teaching yourself something else, I think is a really great way to think about it, where it's not changing the overall goal that you have for yourself or the thing that you're trying to work towards for yourself, but it's adjusting the framework of how you get there. And I think that's a really great, I hope that that's a good way to summarize what you're saying. I think that overall, the idea that you are taking the opportunities that come to you. And, you know, I'm kind of jealous, honestly, that you have a 3D printer now. I was jealous before when you had just a laser printer or a laser cutter, but now you have a 3D printer. I think you're going to like take over the world here.
Yeah. I think you summarized everything that I was saying in a really good way. It's just, you and I talk a lot, and it might, from the outside looking in, people would probably never expect that I would get bored. But honestly, I get bored very quick because if I'm not challenged, I don't actually want to pursue something. And my fiance knows that about me. You know that about me. I'm always moving on to a new project. And no one ever asked me the question, who knows me now, of, Tim, why are you always working on something new? Why are you always doing all these projects? Now it's actually, Tim, what project are you working on right now? How'd you come up with that idea? And now there's excitement around me. So it starts to build what people are trying to build every single day now on every platform, which is a personal brand. Because most people think of a personal brand and automatically they think, oh, I want to make a personal brand for myself. I love beauty. I'm just going to be in a beauty personal space. How are you going to be a personal brand on beauty if you haven't even done anything about beauty, right? When they see people who have the following, it's because those people did something for a long period of time. Everyone always looks at it and says, I want a personal brand. Well, what am I about? I'm about this. Oh, okay. And then that's what they identify as, right? But if you actually want a personal brand, you have to continually do something and share it. And through that back and forth, people know you for something because you've done it and shared it so much that people are like, oh, Mike is the guy who can talk a lot about burnout. He can talk about his experiences. He's the guy who could talk about blogging. He could talk about newsletters, right? It's those kinds of things that people start to know you for. When people reach out to me now, it's, hey, what project are you designing right now with the laser cutter? How can I get your file? Are you selling this? Are you selling that? And then now it's actually, oh, that's a cool architecture project. Have you thought about designing a house like this? And it's like, oh, I didn't even know people were already starting to see that. But that's what building a personal brand is all about. And I think it's just related to this idea that we're talking about. And I just wanted to share that little point.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think it actually blends very well with our final mini lesson for the day, Tim. So in this talk that we've had with practice matters more than the result, I think the last mini lesson I would tell myself is to find yourself through the practice of a singular focus. And I'm going to ask you a question after I talk about this a little bit that I think can go in one of a couple different directions. But for me, in recent years, I've tried many different things, as you know, from writing to video to podcasting, vlogging, all that jazz. You name it, I've probably tested the waters. In every scenario, though, the common denominator for me was, as you might have guessed, writing. Writing is the lifeblood of all I do because the process itself resonates with me so dramatically. It acts as the metric for everything else I do. I use writing as a way to transform the thoughts swimming around inside my head into ideas that can then hopefully help someone change the world and better someone else's life, right? And I think of this quote from Joan Didion, "I write entirely to find out what I'm thinking, what I'm looking at, what I see and what it means, what I want and what I fear." For me, I find myself through the practice of that one thing that resonates with me. And I try to use that process, that practice, as a metric for my success now, rather than any shiny prize, any accolade, anything that might come of it, right? And I think that the growth that I generate for myself and that you could generate for yourself through focusing on that one process, that one practice, is in itself the prize. And I want to ask you, Tim, you just talked about how you start all these different projects. Is there a common denominator in terms of either a process that you use or in terms of the way that you look at the projects that you are pursuing? Is there some sort of common denominator or some singular focus that sort of threads through your work that becomes the meaning for you?
For me, I think about that question in a different way. I think about it in the sense that over time, I needed to find the broader ideas that encompass the things that I love, because I realize that the things that I love are all within design as a general profession. But if it were just about me loving design, I would have never done the things I'm currently doing, because I've learned through trial and error that when you get so myopic that you're only looking at this thing and you're saying, well, I love design, I'm just going to design projects, you eventually reach a point where you burn out because you didn't have any purpose for it. So now how do you take the passion that you have and start to transition it to turn it into something bigger, right? Something that you actually want to pursue because you feel like there's meaning for you. So for me now, I think about it from the perspective of turning what it is you think you love to do into something broad enough that can help you scope down, but allow you to have the permission to pursue all these other things related to the thing that you're trying to pursue. So I'll give an example, and this is something that Chris Doe from the future, that's the future without an E, talks about. There was one thing that he was sharing in a discussion in a pro group, and it was this idea of trying to find your own why, trying to figure out what it is that you're all about. And he said, you know, if you're stuck, try and use these words. Include the words how and a word to in your sentence. And I'll give you an example. I haven't actually gone through the whole exercise to figure out mine, but just this is off the top of my head. You know that I like to design and make products. You know, I like to design and make architecture. You know that I'm teaching it to the world through YouTube. If I were thinking about why I do it, then perhaps for me, it would be something along the lines of, I love to teach architecture and design to the world in order to elevate the level of design that I'm seeing with the technologies that we have. And if it's something like that, now you can start picking and choosing the words, right? That for me, it's about how to teach architecture and design to the world in order to elevate the level of design that we're seeing with the technologies that we have around the world. And so now people can think about it and say, well, he's teaching about the different technology that we have. So for me, I have a laser cutter. I have a 3D printer. Eventually, I'll have a CNC machine and maybe even more. The other part of it is I love architecture and design, so I'm scoping into those fields. But my purpose is how is to teach. And then the how part is the ways that I'm doing it. The to part is the identification of the reasons behind it. And so it's confusing to try and do it because for me, I was so lost. I was like, what am I about? But what I just said is literally a culmination of time that I've invested trying to figure out what that line would be. And I haven't fully identified it, but that in itself is just about where I am right now. And that's how this whole process is, this whole last mini lesson of yours about finding yourself through a singular focus. To me, it's this idea that you need to have tried so many things in order to identify that singular focus first. Once you identify it, you have to try and figure out your purpose behind it. But to figure out the purpose, you need to simultaneously be practicing the thing that you're doing, because through that practice, you start to scope in and figure out what the bigger meaning of that thing is to you. So for me, that's the way that I see it. It's about taking a step back and remembering that, yes, you can put your head down and do all these things, but why are you doing it? Because if you don't know why you're doing it, you're going to burn out. You're not going to have the reasons that help push you and motivate you to continue.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, Tim. That's not necessarily where I thought we were going to go with that, but I think that is actually, it builds on maybe why I was talking about that mini lesson in the first place. So for me, it was more about, and maybe a recommendation to my younger self to find, you know, for me, it's writing. I should reword this as, what is a medium that you enjoy pursuing? So for me, I would naturally rather write or talk than I would to be on video. And I think that when this is a very content creator kind of problem, but I think for me, it was more about trying to recognize that there are, you know, it could be something as simple as reacting to your world through sketching or reacting to your world through photography or some other creative endeavor, working with your hands, making something that, you know, is something that helps you get to what you're talking about. Because I think it's sort of chicken and egg what we're talking about here. And that's why it's interesting that you brought up what you did. So you've been pursuing projects to then find your why, and then those reinforce what your future projects become because of the fact that you've been finding your why in some ways. Would you say that that's accurate?
Yeah, for me, it's about refining it. I know the general reasons why I'm doing something, but to have gotten to that point, it was just embodied feeling and in the things I was doing. I felt like it was on the right track. Once I identified it, then I knew the why, but it was so broad. And I think everyone starts there, and it takes time to refine it to what's unique to you.
Well said. So just to summarize sort of what we've talked about here today, the overall theme is practice matters more than the result. And the many lessons that we've talked about were, we all start somewhere. So show up today and do your best, then show up tomorrow and do it all again. The second mini lesson was fail, fail, and fail some more. Learn from the failure and apply your lessons and move forward to the next thing. The third mini lesson was find meaning in the grind, not the achievement. The fourth mini lesson was consistency long-term will help you more than sprinting. Show up and find your pace. And the last mini lesson that we talked about just now was find yourself through the practice of a singular focus. Tim, aside from what we've talked about, are there any other things that you can think of that you'd like to talk about here, or should we close it up?
I think we're all set. I loved all of these mini lessons here because I think I've always thought about them, but I never actually put them the ways that you have. So I love all of the mini lessons, and I definitely always walk away from these sessions now with so much. It's as if your lesson to your younger self is a bigger lesson to me as a person. So,
well, thanks. I think the same thing from you. It's interesting because we come at these topics with our own perspectives, but even hearing sort of how you resonate with each idea helps me refine or catalyze it for myself, either in further into a way that I was thinking about or in a completely different direction that I think is still very helpful. And hopefully everybody who's listening to this is getting something out of it as well in the same way. So thanks everybody for being here. Be sure to listen to the next topic, which Tim will be spearheading here, where we will talk about finding your voice. And we have a lot more lessons coming up for you in this 12-part series. And I appreciate you guys being here and thank you for listening. And I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, everyone.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Unpacking Design. Check us out anytime at unpackingdesign.com.
And you can also find us on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Please remember to leave a review and share this podcast with someone you know.